Okay, folks, you're very welcome tonight at the Ward media debate on the topic of the representation of Irish travellers in the media. And we have four speakers tonight. Dr. Owen Devereux from UL, whom some of the media students will have heard of. I'll probably come to hate over time because of the work they have to do in relation to his stuff. Eugene Phelan from The Limerick Leader, Joe Nash from Live 95 FM, and Vanessa Buswell from the Limerick Traveller Development Group. So I'm going to ask each of the speakers to speak in turn, then we'll open it to the floor, and I'd like to begin with Owen Devereux.
Thank you, Michael. I suppose I have to begin and just say from the very, very outset that I approach this particular issue as a human being and as a sociologist, and I approach this issue from the point of view of social justice. I think it's interesting that 42 years ago, the Commission on Itinerancy reported in 1963, and rather symbolically, the image used on the cover of that report suggested that the traditional traveller barrel wagon would find itself and lead itself ultimately to a house, that travellers would become like us, they'd become settled people and so on. And I suppose at the outset, I want to say that I think that the way in which travellers are treated generally in society and the way in some sections of the media the travellers are treated, that this is the greatest social injustice in evidence in modern Ireland. I think if we look at the way in which we have treated travellers, if you look at the way in which public opinion is so easily mobilised against travellers, that we are dealing with the greatest social injustice in modern times in Ireland. It's also worth remarking at the outset that if we look at the traveller's story, particularly in the last 40 or 50 years, and as travellers have become more urbanised, as they lost their traditional role in rural Ireland and became more urbanised, and more travellers came to cities and towns, we see a direct increase in negative beliefs, negative public opinion about travellers. And I think it's worth reflecting on that for a moment. In the 1970s, Micheál McGrail was asking people about what were then termed itinerants and the long-term unemployed. And travellers came out very badly in his research in terms of public beliefs. And likewise, in the 1980s, when he repeated his research, again, travellers came out very, very badly in terms of public beliefs, public attitudes towards them. I'm involved in a range of research projects about travellers, which particularly look at media representations of travellers. And that kind of research is looking at the relationship between media representations of travellers and public beliefs about the travelling community. And I think it's interesting and it's rather striking that in the most recent European Values study, which surveyed a representative sample of members of the public in Ireland, 50.1% of the population surveyed would not have travellers living near them. They would term travellers as unwanted neighbours. Now, I'd also say at the outset that if you want to look at the bald facts about travellers, if you want to look at the three times higher than the average rate of infant mortality, if you want to look at the life expectancy of traveller men and traveller women, which is still in the mid to late 40s, whereas men and women in the settled community can, with exceptions, you know, expect to live into their 70s and higher now. This is one of the greatest disgraces of our society and of our history in Ireland. If you look at participation rates in education, if you look at the very basic conditions that people expect in this day and age, and we are not affording these basic facilities to travellers. We are allowing the state off the hook. And this brings me, in some respects, to the role of the media. And I'm not so much here to, you know, talk specifically to the participating media organisations who are here, Live 95 FM or indeed the Limerick Leader. But I think it's interesting that a very significant number of members of the general public have very little to do with travellers. They rarely talk to travellers on an equal basis, on a one-to-one basis, and treat them with equality. And I think in this context, the media and mass media play a hugely important role in shaping the perceptions that people have generally about travellers. And we've just been through the wake in the last couple of weeks of the Nally case, and certain sections of the tabloid media in Ireland have behaved disgracefully in terms of representing this particular issue. And these kinds of representations, they are very powerful, and they shape and determine the kinds of myths and stereotypes and baggage that people have about this particular issue. There are NUJ guidelines about how you represent the world and indeed how you go about and report responsibly and so on. But I think there are issues there about how and to what extent this issue is policed. I know the Minister for Justice, Equality and Law Reform is talking very seriously about introducing a press council. I would welcome a press council, and I specifically would welcome a press council because I think minority groups in society will be afforded the opportunity, or at least groups working with minority groups and those groups themselves will now hopefully be afforded the opportunity to challenge representations, to challenge stereotypes. We also know that the Citizen Traveller campaign was axed 2 or 3 years ago, and there is a really, really pressing need for a public information campaign about traveller culture, about the traveller way of life. And I mean, I would think this is quite a stark choice that we have. Do we want to come back here in 42 years' time and argue again about, you know, the rights and wrongs of this and so on, and allow these kinds of injustices to continue? The media's role is very, very important in this. I think media professionals have choices to make about the way in which they represent travellers. Interestingly, the chairman this evening, chairperson this evening, Michael Breen, and I have looked in some detail at the way in which the paper of record in Ireland, not a tabloid paper, the Irish Times, we've looked in detail at how good stories about travellers and bad stories about travellers, for example, in relation to crime or feuds and so on, how they are constructed. And it's interesting to look at, you know, the frequency of good and positive stories about the travelling community versus negative stories, the way they're constructed. And we did a very bold thing. What we did is we actually did a word count and we actually checked, you know, not only the frequency of good and bad stories, but also if good things happen and if things that we should celebrate about traveller culture happen, we found quite convincingly that positive stories, in fact, attract a much shorter word count and perhaps less of prominence in the newspaper. So it's interesting in that regard. So, I really want to end with, as was a challenge to the other speakers here, particularly those working in the media industry, about how they go about reporting on these issues. And they are complex issues. They're about poverty, they're about exclusion, they're about racism a great deal of the time. They're very complicated problems, but I think they're very, very real issues to be addressed. And the media have, in terms of social responsibility, the media have a really, really significant role to play in terms of how members of the general public understand the complexity of these issues. We see this, you know, again, a parallel might be in terms of recent inward migration into Ireland, a very significant aspect of social change. And again, there's considerable confusion in the minds of the public as to what an asylum seeker is, what a refugee is, and so on. All of this is indicative to me that the media play an immensely powerful role. They have huge power in terms of shaping how we understand a particular issue. So that's really my question for them. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Owen. I'd like now to call on Eugene Phelan from the Limerick Leader.
Evening. I see if you're all media students. I think that the females are taking over big time. It's actually the same in the Limerick Leader. Quite a lot of... I remember when I started in journalism 30 years ago, you'd rarely see a female journalist. Well, you'd see a few, but... nowadays, it's great to see so many females coming in, and there's a lot of obviously female students. Maybe the lads are watching the soccer and they're not bothered coming here tonight. But just to let you know, my name is Eugene Phelan. I'm the deputy editor of the Limerick Leader, also the news editor. And my job is to basically to send reporters out in stories. We decide what stories we cover. And we have some of you might be from Limerick, we have a paper every day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. When I started in the Limerick Leader, I was quite young. I was 18, and I was a little bit. I was involved with Vincent DePaul at the time, and I had this romantic idea that you could change a lot of things through journalism. You can actually, and that is the good thing: is if you do write stories about different things, you can actually change things. You can people read, and especially nowadays, even more because with the internet and everything, stories you write are seen. And I do remember though, I did quite a lot of research into the travellers, and I was just a young lad, and I went to the different camps and I met the different people and the travellers, and I was quite amazed that there were in these halting sites, which many of them are still here in Limerick, And if you saw the conditions they're living in, some of them people didn't, for some reason, the travellers, I can't understand, some of them, they don't live in the houses, they lived outside, or they were in camps and tents and outside. And these people are very, very poor, and we wrote stories about them, we wrote stories about the halting sites, but nothing really changed, to be quite honest. And coming tonight, I said, God, I've spoken for 5 or 10 minutes, I better do a bit of research. So I just hit the internet to see what stories we've done on in recent times on travellers. And it really, really makes sad reading, because it's more or less tragedy after tragedy. And I often wonder, do councillors, do politicians care? We have a situation, there was, I just gone to another young journalist, actually she was a student here, Claude O'Leary, a very good young journalist. We've put her on these issues in recent times, and she went up, there's a Faulkner family, they're living in Long Pavement. It's right next to, there was a dump at before your time, a massive dump in Long Pavement, and they put this travelling family living there. And very sadly, in November 2004, a lady called Joanna Faulkner, she's 43 years of age, she had, I'm not quite sure, it was a 10 or 11 children. She died. Why she died, we don't know. There was the family say it was from Wheel's disease, you know, this is the disease you get from, I'm sure you well know, from rat's urine. This story, we've been campaigning, we've been writing this story for the last 2 years. We've been going up and meeting these family, and I'm glad to say now that something is happening, that this family are being moved. They want to move them, I know, to another place in Myross, but at least something is happening. But I'm amazed. If a person, if it was another family, if it wasn't a travelling family, you know, the way they've been treated, I think is disgraceful. If you go up to the other sites, okay, so people say blame the travellers for the conditions they're living in. That there could be a point there, but at the same time, people seem to ignore, generally speaking, councillors. I know from going to city council meetings for 30 years, they see the travellers as a nuisance, but they've never really addressed the issue. The conditions they're living in, and I know there's always a problem from moving them from one halting site areas to another, but I just ask you to go out sometime and look at the conditions they're living in. They're quite disgraceful. We have a very important role to play in journalism. This is what we can do. We can go and meet these people, talk to them, and give them a voice. The national media, you know, they're not. It's local papers, local radio stations can do a lot more than I think the national media and in highlighting these things. So I'm kind of really speaking off the cuff. I know people will debate things like, should, when you're writing in journalism, should the travellers have a capital T or a small T? I don't think that makes any difference. It really doesn't, you know. As far as I'm concerned, travellers are as Irish as me and you. They're the very same. They have an awful lot to offer. I've met loads of them, and all over the years, so some great characters. They do, you know, they have a lot to offer in society, and it's a pity that the mix isn't there, because they've brought in all this legislation. But I still see, I know if a traveller's going to different pubs in Limerick, there'll still be, and I know the law is there, but we all know that they're not accepted by many people. And unfortunately, and I think the traveller movement have to do it, the travelling people have to do it, there's a certain amount of travellers causing problems. And this is quite, and I know this from my work, there's one or two families and they're causing trouble, whether it's from robberies or from, but percentage-wise it's the same as, or probably less than other things, but when they end up in court, they're described as travellers or whatever. So they give the general travelling community a bad name. So what I'd say to the travelling community is, look, most of us are law-abiding citizens. Why don't we kind of, you know, expose these people or whatever, and have not, you know, they're giving the rest of the travellers a bad name. And that's what I'd say to the travellers. And, you know, anytime members of the travelling community come to us, we would always listen to them and try and, you know, give them their side of the story. And, you know, we have a very good, I think we have, we'll find out later on what you have to say, but I know personally that we have a fairly good relationship with travellers. I know they'll be very annoyed about some stories we write from time to time. But, you know, in Ratkeel, we have a unique situation in Limerick. I don't think there's any place in Ireland like Ratkeel, because most of the village, or the town, if you want to call it, is occupied by travellers. And I know I covered court in Retkeel, and you speak to the sergeant hunter, his lovely man, Sergeant Dunleavy, and he's now retired, and he said he had no trouble with the travellers over the years. Okay, there'd be a few of them up in court for this, that and the other. They had their tax, did their insurance, most of them. Then you'll get one or two who cause trouble, and there's a kind of a general image of thing. But we still have a big problem in Irish society between the travellers and, if you want to say, the settled communities. It hasn't been addressed properly, and there still is. I mean, you know, I remember watching Glen Row, and you had a situation where you had the local traveller going in, having pints and chatting away with everyone. That's not reality, I think, in the real world that I live in anyway. Maybe it happens in some places. But as I say, that's really all I have to say. I suppose if you have any questions later on, but just on the journalism side, we don't have any direct policy the way we deal with traveller matters. We treat travellers the same as we treat everybody else. Okay? Thanks.
Thanks, Eugene. I'd like now to invite our radio representative, John Ash from Live 95, to address the group.
I started the previous two rounds of applause because I figured that when I stood up, then people might applaud. I'm delighted they did. Thanks very much for the invite this evening. And I suppose I was thinking when Owen was posing questions there of the politician's answer, I'm glad you asked me that question, Owen. And it's a tricky one. It's a difficult one. I think I've learned from what you've talked about and also from what Eugene has talked about this evening. When I was asked to come along this evening, to be honest with you, I had to examine my conscience, which is probably why I was so late. And one of the questions that I wanted to ask people this evening, and maybe you might just give me some idea if this is the case, how many of you would have a friend from the travelling community? Someone that you'd consider a friend. One, two. It's just two. How many of you had a classmate from the traveller community in school? Primary or secondary? Primary? No, primary. Because that was my experience, as it happens. I had a friend of mine, a classmate of mine in primary school, who was a settled traveller. And it was a very interesting experience, because for most of the time going through primary school, we didn't really know what a traveller was. And we certainly didn't have any thought process about the differences between us. And by the time we got to the stage that we realised that there were travellers, or the guy in question was a traveller, it had gone beyond the point of really mattering that much, because the personal relationship had been built up between us. And he and his family are still in my home area and are accepted and respected in the area. And that, I think, helps. I think personal interaction is a key element, and from a young age is a key element in dealing with the relationships between communities. Because when you hear the term communities, it can seem much easier to be prejudiced about it. And as an aside, we also had someone in our primary school class who had spina bifida, so he was in a wheelchair right up through primary school, and he used to get launched out of the wheelchair, and we'd have to put him back in, and the whole lot. And again, that helps too, because you grow up with something, you become used to it, and then as life goes on and other elements come into it, it doesn't cause quite the same issue as I think it does for people who mightn't have that experience. I'm glad, by the way, by the numbers of hands that went up. That's more than I thought. I thought we might have one or two max, but we have a few more than that. But I think the truth of the matter is, if we're absolutely honest, and I've been examining this myself over the last few days, we're ambivalent about minorities. I think those of us in the settled community, to use that term, whatever that really means, I think we're a little bit uncomfortable with it. I think, as Eugene pointed out, I can't think of too many pubs in Limerick City where you would have a mix of travellers and settled people. I can't see anywhere where you have huge interaction. The Rathkeel example is a good example, and I have some relations in that part of the world as well. But even there, and that's probably the best example in the country of day-to-day contact, the truth of the matter is far more complex. It's a separation. It's an apartheid of kinds. And I have some personal experience. of this. I think there's a respect there between members of the travelling community and members of the settled community who've lived in the town for a very long period of time. But it's complicated, and at times it's a strained relationship as well. But it's probably the best example in the country, and I think it's one that we can learn from. So the truth of the matter, and I don't know if people agree or disagree, and we'll hear that later in the debate, is we're all a bit uncomfortable about it, except maybe the very best of us, the very best people, the very best in terms of education, the people who interact more and more with communities, be they the traveller communities or others. Maybe they genuinely have no ambivalence, but I think the majority of us, if we're honest, certainly do. And of course, there's another aspect to all of this now, and that is that we have more minorities than ever before. We had one primary minority, the travelling community, basically the same religion, the same skin colour, effectively Irish. The only difference was they made a choice that I personally don't fully understand, but I respect the fact that they did, and many of them still do, and they travel around the country. But we haven't been able to deal with that small minority in Limerick City and County and beyond. And now we have minorities coming in from various countries who are genuinely different, or at least more different than our previous minority. So I think we need to look at it in an overall context now. That could be good for the travelling community, because we're faced with a very big challenge. We're faced with a very big challenge in Limerick City, in parts of County Limerick, where there are many more and more diverse minorities operating. So I think there's fault on both sides, and I feel that very strongly. I think there are rights and responsibilities among the travelling community and the settled community, and I think that also applies when you're dealing with other minorities. It's very easy to say, well, I have the right to do X. It's more difficult to say, I have the responsibility to do Y. And I have watched the debate develop when it comes to people coming in from Africa or asylum seekers. And I've been interested in how we haven't yet, to my mind, got to the point of deciding how we're going to order our society into the future. And I think the danger of ghettoisation is massive. Some would suggest that Limerick is better than other parts of the country. And the experience of minority leaders and what they've been saying in the media and elsewhere seems to be more positive than in other parts of the country. But again, as part of the wider debate of minorities, I think there are lessons to be learned from the traveller experience and lessons to be learned from people coming in from elsewhere. So what about us? How do we treat this situation? I suppose we have to hold our hands up, really. I mean, to a large degree, we're a commercial operation, and probably like most media organisations, we cover issues relating to travellers when there's a story, like the Nally case in recent times, and that's when it stirs up debate. And of course, it stirs up the whole wrong kind of debate, doesn't it? Because it allows the fringes on both sides to meet in the middle and crash against each other. And it's great entertainment, if we're honest. It's great sport. Anyone who's been listening to the radio and television debates over the last number of weeks, why do we keep listening through the ad breaks? Because it's fascinating. And but again, it's just under the surface of the issues that have arisen over a long period of time. And when you scratch that surface, and when you have a complex issue like the Nally case in Mayo, you begin to see where there might be advantage for individuals in taking a particular line that looks like one thing, but in reality is something very different. Our general principle, which is probably a naive one, as Owen might suggest, is a bit, what's that line from the US Constitution? We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. America, the idea, I think, is far better maybe than the reality, but that's the effort. I mean, that's how you have to try and approach it. There are issues around that, of course, and the issues are, that's fine, but what about the fact that there needs to be positive discrimination in favour of minorities? And if you don't have that, they'll never catch up. And what we're seeing in the North, for example, the PSNI and the reform of the police service of Northern Ireland, when you try positive discrimination, it leads to a backlash of its own. So it needs to be very carefully managed. So in ideal circumstances, we'd like to treat every citizen the same on air. We'd like to treat every story the same, regardless of what your background is, what your educational attainment is. But in practice, it's a lot more difficult than that. So when I went and looked with the Broadcasting Commission of Ireland, who regulate independent broadcasting in the country, the RTE Authority actually are the ultimate arbiters for RTE, and the BCI are attempting to get themselves in a position where they will regulate standards right through television and radio. But that's a political debate, and it's a pretty hot one at the moment. So I went and I asked the BCI, I said, what's the position? What should the traveller policy of independent radio stations be? And you might say, well, you should have done that a long time ago, Joe, and that's a reasonable point, perhaps I should have. But I did. I went and said, what's the story? And they said, well, there isn't really a specific policy relating to travellers in broadcasting. I said, well, what is there? And they said, well, you have to look at the 1988 Radio and Television Act, Section 9, Duty of Sound Broadcasting Contractor in relation to programmes. Now, I'm not going to bore you with all the detail, but it goes something like, every sound broadcasting contractor shall ensure that all news broadcast by him, that's their word, not mine, is reported and presented in an objective and impartial manner and without any expression of his own views. For example, Section B, subsection B, the broadcast treatment of current affairs, including matters which are either of public controversy or the subject of current public debate, is fair to all interests concerned, and that the broadcast matter is presented in an objective and impartial manner and without expression of the broadcaster's own views. Subsection D of that section 9, anything which may reasonably be regarded as offending against good taste or decency, or as being likely to promote or incite to crime, or as tending to undermine the authority of the state, should not be broadcast by him. So it's very general, as you can see. There's another aspect to it, a code of programme standards. The BCI are now looking at that, again, as they move towards hoping that they can regulate the entire industry. That's being debated at the moment. They're talking about looking at the portrayal of persons and groups in society as forming part of that code. But it may not happen until next year. And then you can make a complaint to the Broadcasting Complaints Commission under headings like impartiality, taste and decency, law and order, privacy of an individual. So, those are the rules. They're very general. We have to try and deal with them as best we can. But there isn't really, certainly from the top down, guidance on the issue of dealing with travellers. What do we have to do to try and deal with it? Well, the Limerick Leader have a great page, which you've probably seen, which doesn't specifically relate to travellers, but does relate to minority communities. And they bring people into it by having it in the language, be it Polish or Russian, but there are also English translations each week. And I think that's something that we need to look at from a broadcast point of view, and I would commend the Leader for having done that. I think we need to explore diversity more, and I think we need to look at travellers in the context of minorities generally, and the right to refer to race or religion in court reporting, for example. I don't have a huge issue with that, once it's reasonable and in the context of the story. And my final observation would be about Irish citizenship itself, because I think that is where travellers come into the debate, that is where minorities come into the debate too. And that means loyalty to the state, not just coming in here from outside or existing within the framework of the Irish Republic without accepting that with your rights come responsibilities. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. And finally, I'd like to call on Vanessa Boswell from the Limerick Traveller Development Group. Vanessa, you're very welcome.
Thank you for the invite. Now, Owen sort of nicked half my speech. So some of it will go over what Owen already said, really, but in different words. I'm the coordinator of Limerick Travellers Development Group. I've been there for nearly a year. I'm not a traveller myself, but we have. I've been working with travellers for a year, with staff on the CE scheme we have, and I know a lot of the travellers around the nine sites that we cover. So About sort of Limerick Travellers Development Group, our main policy to work with travellers is our vision, is our main aim, which is to promote, to work towards a partnership of travellers and the members of the majority population based on respect for traveller culture with the aim of promoting travellers' rights, dignity and equality. That's our aim. So and tonight's question that was put to me was the representation of travellers in our media. So basically the representation of Irish travellers in the media coverage of incidents involving individual members of the traveller community often, not always, often portrays travellers as one of the same. This serves to fuel negative attitudes towards travellers from the settled community. Anti-traveller stories eventually lead to the exclusion of a whole ethnic group and results in discrimination. Travellers cannot be blamed for the actions of small minorities, just as whole sections of the settled community cannot be blamed for the actions of their individuals. The Citizen Traveller Campaign undertook a media monitoring project, and this project was over 2.5 years, which they collected more than 7,000 articles containing comments on travellers across all forms of the Irish media. More than 60% of these articles contained anti-traveller bias. Irish travellers are widely reported on in the Irish media, but often in a way that promotes negative stereotypes of travellers. The majority of the settled population get their information on travellers from the media, as Owen was saying earlier. Prejudice reporting impacts negatively on travellers having a decent place to live, proper education, proper access to health services and equal opportunities in the workplace. Irish travellers are among the groups that are the most seriously marginalised by the media in Ireland. Travellers are widely acknowledged as one of the most marginalised and disadvantaged groups in Irish society. Travellers fare poorly on every indicator used to measure disadvantage. That includes unemployment, poverty, social exclusion, health status, infant mortality, life expectancy, illiteracy, education and training levels, access to decision making and political representation, accommodation and living conditions. For example, in Limerick, 43% of travellers live on permanent halting sites. Not all the travellers have their own bay or unit and often have to share with other travellers. All of these sites are overcrowded without proper living conditions and unsuitable for the needs of the families living there. 7 of the 9 halting sites are in the accommodation plans for the Limerick City and County Councils, and these 7 are to be redeveloped. Unfortunately, these plans were for the last 5 years and now have a new 5-year plan. Unfortunately, only one of these sites has been redeveloped, and that's the Castle Troy site. 15% of travellers in Limerick are living on temporary halting sites, 13% live in group housing, 18% live in local authority housing, and there's still 11% living on the roadside with no services whatsoever. Poor living conditions have a big impact on traveller health. 42% of traveller families generally suffer from breathing difficulties and lung illnesses. Traveller men live on average 10 years less than settled men. Traveller women live on average 12 years less than settled women. Infant mortality is 181 per 1,000 life births. Compared to 1.7 per 1,000 live births in the settled population. The stillborn rate is twice as high as the national average, and the sudden infant death rate is 12 times higher than the national average. These are just some of the startling statistics. I could talk for an hour on them. And this shows the high level of disadvantages that the travellers face in today's society. As the Economic and Social Research Institute quoted, "The circumstances of the Irish travelling people are intolerable. No humane or decent society, once made aware of such circumstances, should permit them to persist." To conclude my speech, if the Irish media represented the Irish traveller community in a positive light and made the settled population aware of their circumstances that the traveller community face, then surely the decent people of Ireland would not allow the inhumane circumstances that some of today's travellers live in and the discrimination that they face, but ensure that travellers are treated with dignity, respect and equality. Thank you.